Awesome. Yep, good to go. Well, as James said, I'm Jay Tremblay. I'm the stewardship pastor here. People will go, what is that? What is stewardship pastor? Stewardship, what I do is I help people manage their time, their talents, and their treasure, most simply. Been at Grace Chapel for 15 years now and been on staff for, it'll be 10 years and a couple of months. I started out as the life groups pastor and then transitioned over to stewardship about 5 years ago. I'm married. My wife, Patty, we're coming up on our 26th anniversary, and she is also an employee at Grace Chapel. She is Pastor Steve and Pastor Mark's executive assistant, so you might see emails from her occasionally. If you're ever trying to book an appointment with them, you're going to go through her, so be kind to her. And then we've got two children, Natalie and Nathan. Natalie's 24. She works with the middle school. So if anyone has any kids in the middle school room, she's the crazy girl always bouncing around. And then our son Nathan is 20 years old. I was born, I say born and raised Catholic because there's really no choice in the matter. You are Catholic as soon as you are born. I was baptized a month afterwards, christened. Any ex-Catholics in here, previous Catholics? Okay, excellent. So you know there's no choice in the matter. And went through 13 years of Catholic school, and the entire time that I was going through school, I never really understood why I needed to go through someone else to talk to God. I always questioned that. It never sat right with me. And as a result, after I got through school, I just stopped going to church. My parents divorced, and we just stopped going altogether. Then I met my wife, who was Baptist, and went to her church for the very first time, walked in and goes, what in the world is this? Because Catholic church is 45 minutes, very liturgical, up, down, kneel, up, down, kneel, you know, say a prayer, you're out of there. And went to the Baptist church, and there was, you know, 40 minutes of worship. At that time, it was music to me. It wasn't worship. 40 minutes of music and another 40 minutes of teaching. I'm like, what in the world? Didn't understand at all. People were raising their hands. I'm like, oh my gosh, what, they're showing off. What are they doing? So I didn't get it at all. So after we were married, we both went to church separately. I went to Catholic church. She went to the Baptist church. Did that for a while until our daughter was born, and then really God started working in my heart at that point. It's like, look, you need to lead your family. So we started going to the Baptist church together. And there was one Sunday morning during a worship service that we came in, we were a little bit late, and the only seats were in the front row. So we went in there, sat in the front row with my wife's parents, and during worship, the worship leader was a guest worship leader. She was singing to me uncomfortably. She was singing to me right there in the front row. I was just squirming. I couldn't handle it. I got up and I left. And I went and sat in the back row of the balcony. Left my wife there, by the way. I don't recommend doing that. So I sat back there, and during the service, God was just working me over. It's like, what are you doing? You are just being a knucklehead right now. So at the end of the service, they had an altar call, and here I come from the back of the church, back of the balcony, right in front of my wife, and accepted Christ right there, wife and parents. So that was in 1994, and it was, I mean, just, it was incredible. She was a wreck, and it was just awesome. So this was out in California. We moved out here to Tennessee back in 1998 and found Grace Chapel in 2000. And since we stepped through the doors, I've never been to another church on a Sunday morning since. Absolutely felt the presence of the Lord as soon as we walked into the school building at the time, before we were on this land here. And just absolutely fell in love with the people, fell in love with the teaching, and haven't looked back. And it really wasn't until we started serving and getting into a small group that's when we got connected here at the church. So I love the fact that you're in this class, because this builds community and relationship, and that's really needed when you've got a church of 5,500 people. Otherwise, you'll be walking in, looking around. You know, this church is very clicky I say that, but it's in a good way because people are connected. So you walk in on Sunday morning, people are in their groups talking, and it's awesome. But sometimes it's difficult as a visitor coming in to kind of break through that. Everyone's gracious and everyone's very kind, but getting to know someone is very difficult on a Sunday morning. So that's why these classes and small groups and serving is so important. So we're glad you're here. I love teaching this class, getting to know new people, and look forward to seeing what God's going to do in here this morning. Scott?
Thanks, Jay. Good morning. My name's Scott. Been coming to Grace Chapel around 12 years now. My wife, Melissa, she heads up the greeter ministry at 9 a.m. And we have two kids. They're both grown. We have a family business. So my son and daughter-in-law work with us in the Franklin area, and my daughter works in our business in Chattanooga. I was technically born Catholic as well, but our faith and religion in particular growing up as a kid just wasn't a big part of my family life. Met my wife Melissa, was married at 20, she's Jewish, and so I converted over to Judaism. And we were very active in our synagogue. For almost 25 years, on the board and all that kind of stuff that people would do that are active. I was involved in healthcare. I had a good job with a large healthcare company here in town. And then I got a phone call. And the phone call was that my daughter had been diagnosed with cancer. And so it was called Hodgkin's lymphoma, which in the cancer world, that's one of the more treatable cancers. It's not that you could ever want to pick a cancer, but if you could, that's one you would pick. But it's treatable. The success rate of it is very, very high. So being in healthcare, and I had some contacts, we said, hey, we're going to solve this problem. We're going to fix this. Well, unfortunately for my daughter, she had a very aggressive form of Hodgkin's lymphoma. So after going through chemo and all that sort of thing, they did the test after her treatments, and she still had hot spots. So she had to go through a stem cell transplant. Well, that was a much more serious kind of a procedure versus going through what she did with chemo. So my wife and I were really down. Our synagogue, and this isn't a slam against Judaism, but the reality of it is in our synagogue, they don't do a lot of praying for individuals. They're very good about praying for corporate stuff, you know, the world, Israel, so on and so forth. But as far as praying for an individual, that just wasn't happening. Meanwhile, in our community, people were praying for our daughter. And it was so wild. We would bump into somebody and say, we're praying for your daughter. And I'm like, I don't even know my daughter. How could you be praying for my daughter? And they would say, somehow in the conversation, they went to Grace Chapel. And this happened two or three times. And so we're like, what is this Grace Chapel? And oddly enough, it's pretty close to where I live. But I didn't know exactly. I don't go down south all as a general rule. So we dug in a little bit, decided to go check out Grace Chapel. So we came. Melissa and I came on a cold Saturday night right before Sunday services in November. We drove around and we were like, at that time it was much smaller. It was essentially a nice looking barn.
It's not now?
No, it still is. It didn't have a cross on the building, and we heard it was non-denominational. We didn't even know what that was. And so we were just like, well, let's go check it out. And so that next Sunday, my son, daughter-in-law, Melissa, myself, and a couple friends, we came to Grace Chapel. And I never do this, but we sat like on the second row, and we've never been through a worship service. So when it started up and everybody was standing and like Jay was saying, the hands in the air and all that kind of thing, we were just like, wow, this is overwhelming. And then it went on for a long time. In our synagogue, we'd have a song or two here or there, but we didn't have 40 minutes of worship going on. And then the pastor started to preach, and he started to preach on the book of Jonah, and we were like, gosh, this is Old Testament stuff. So that spoke to us as well. And but we felt like he was sincerely speaking directly to us about the storms in our life and about what was going on with our family. And we were encouraged to join a small group, and we did. And those people continued to pray for our daughter. If you fast forward to today, she runs our business in Chattanooga. She is healed. And the journey within this church has just been such a blessing for myself and my family. It's been very, very powerful. It was tougher for my wife to convert from Judaism because she's born Jewish, still is Jewish, but she's a believer in Jesus Christ and a follower of Jesus Christ. So she's rock solid with that. Her mom and her dad passed away about a year or so ago, but her mom still gives us a little bit of a hard time. You know, for fun, for example, we would put up a Christmas tree just because we like it. We think that's fun. And it was a big tree that was in our foyer. And she would come to visit us during the holidays, and she would just walk right past that tree. She wouldn't say, she wouldn't acknowledge it, you know, hey, that's a great-looking tree, or, you know, it's just like it didn't exist. So we had a few laughs with that as well. So that's my story. And today, as Jay touched on, we're going to talk about stewardship. So if y'all in your books, page 53, I guess it is, I want to just dig just for a minute or so deeper into this idea of stewardship, because if you could lock this into your head, more importantly into your heart, then you're going to go a long way with this idea. Have you ever thought about the fact that God owns everything? And if you look in 1 Chronicles 29, I know it's not in your handouts, but 1 Chronicles 29, 11 through 12, it's David's prayer. Everything in the heaven and earth is yours, O Lord. This is your kingdom. We adore you as being in charge of everything. Riches and honor come from you alone, and you are the ruler over all mankind. Your hand controls power and might, and it is at your discretion that men are made great and given strength. And if you look further in Scripture, it'll talk about how God owns all the gold and God owns all the animals and so on and so forth. Well, why is that important? Because this idea of stewardship is you're a manager of another's property. Okay? So if he owns everything and you're a manager of another's property, then I personally believe if you can lock that into your heart, you will manage it differently than if you owned your property. You follow me? Mm-hmm. You know, even with kids, my grandkids, I have two, I didn't mention that earlier, but two grandkids, when we talk about the fact that God owns their bicycle, they take better care of their bicycle. God owns your car, you take better care of your car, your home, your finances. So the idea of stewardship is just is really important. There's over 2,350 verses in Scripture that deal with wealth and possessions. So more than any other subject. And so, you know, for God, it's certainly important to have that much baked into the book because it's a fact of life that, in our culture in particular, that it's financial problems and stress. The more you have that going on in your life, the further away you're pulled from God. You can't concentrate on it. You're worried about handling this, that, or the other. So, and stewardship is also giving of time, talent, and treasure. We talk a lot about the treasure part, but time and talent is very important as well. So, question one, my steward reflects my commitment to discipleship. So certainly God wants your best, right? Paul encouraged the Corinthians, as an example, to also excel in the grace of giving. You know, it's too often that stewardship of money is given a different status than other aspects of discipline. You would never say to yourself, I want less faith, or keep my faith right where it is, or keep my love right where it is. But it's interesting when we think about giving, we lock a percentage in, and we're going to say, we're going to stop right there rather than grow it. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting as far as this idea of discipleship. If we treat the idea of giving the same way we do other aspects of discipleship, true discipleship includes growing in the mature use of all our resources. Number two, God, giving makes me more godly. Of course, John 3:16, God so loved the world, he gave his only son. Certainly the ultimate sacrifice. Number three, giving draws me closer to God. You know, I touched on that a moment ago. If you're worried about your finances, it's certainly hard to concentrate on God. If you're worried about you don't have time to do anything, that's a problem. If you're stuck in a certain spot in life that's causing pressure, that's why you hear people like Dave Ramsey talk about debt, you're debtor slave to the lender type of thing. Well, it's true. You're in bondage. And the fact is, if you're in that kind of bondage, you got to deal with that. And you're probably not concentrating on God in those circumstances. Number four, giving is the antidote to materialism. You know, our culture in particular, we are always bombarded with things that you didn't think you didn't even know existed, but now you want them. So marketing is a big deal, and Madison Avenue is a big deal in our culture. There's always something telegraphing, buy, 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 get, get. And so giving is an antidote to this, to keep that in check. Let's see, number five, giving strengthens my faith. Touched a little bit on that a moment ago. Number six, giving is an investment in eternity. Number seven, giving blesses me in return. And number eight, I know I'm going fast here, but giving makes me happy. Okay? Now, those are all, I think, true statements, right? Can someone here give me an example of when God strengthened your faith through giving? Anybody got a story they want to share? Come on, y'all.
How long can we take?
This, yeah. Not for you. This is
for All right.
Lori?
Probably about 20 years ago, some friends of ours had a daughter who wanted to buy our car. And so we were like, great. And they said, well, she really can't afford it. So can she just make payments? So we said, sure. So for the first 3 months, she made payments, like $50. And then she stopped making payments. And, you know, at that point, you just want to go to the parents and say, you know, this isn't really responsible. You know, we need to hold her accountable. And we prayed about it, and we just felt like the Holy Spirit said, you know, just let it go. Let it go. And it was a couple months later, she sent us a letter, and she had decided to go into ministry and wanted us to be supporters financially. And, of course, our knee-jerk reaction was, what in the world? What? This is just crazy. But we held on to the letter, and, you know, we decided, let's just give it to God and just see what he says. And so we did, we faithfully prayed about it, and we both came to the same conclusion that we needed to give her what she owed us. Mm. So that's what we ended up giving her. And we got so much back that year.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
But one of the greatest things we got back was a letter from her, probably a couple years after that. And she said, I just want to thank you. Because now I'm married, I have a child, and I did go into ministry full time, and you helped me. So that was like an added bonus, you know.
Yeah.
But God did provide.
Yeah.
Yes.
What we gave to her that did make sense to the world. Mm-hmm. You know. Awesome.
Great story. Thank you. Jay?
All right. Next session, giving with a right attitude. Number one, I give expectantly. Number two, I give willingly. Number three, I give cheerfully. So think about this. How do you give? You know, do you give over to God with your hands clenched, going, here you go, God. You know, this is what you're asking for. Here it is. Or do you give with open hands? Give with closed hands, you can't receive anything back. Give with open hands, you're going to receive back. So think about that when the offering bag goes by. You know, are you jamming the check in there? Or are you putting in and you praying over it at that point? If you give online, are you praying over it at that point? You know, give to God knowing that this is His. You're just giving something back to Him that's already His. Scott talked about God owns everything. We're just giving a portion of what He's given us back to Him, what's rightfully His. So give cheerfully. Give happily. Give willingly. And then number four is I give sacrificially. Grace Chapel has a very long history of giving sacrificially, dating back to when we first started 21 years ago. I'm going to fast forward a little bit. Once we were in this building, it was, I think, 2003 or 2004, we had what was called the Resource Revolution. It was a conference done by Pastor James Ryle. Friday night, Saturday morning. On Friday night, Pastor Ryle spoke about giving sacrificially, and that was giving until it hurt. Sacrificial giving isn't just, you know, writing a check for $100 or what have you, unless it's your last $100. Giving sacrificially means you're giving just about everything you can by faith. And so we taught on it that night, and then he challenged us that evening. He goes, I want you to go home, and I want you to pray about what you're going to give sacrificially tomorrow. Gulp, right? And he didn't tell us what we're giving towards. And there were about 30 families that were represented in that conference. So we taught on Saturday, and it was time to give. Well, my wife and I both prayed about it separately, and we got back together, and then we prayed together and said, okay, this is what God told me that we need to give. And she got the same number. So we were both in tune, and that's what we gave. Again, not knowing what we were supposed to be giving to. And we gave, honestly, we gave just about everything that we had at that point. Actually, what we did as well is it was right before Christmas, and we called all of our family and said, look, God's asking us to do something. We're being obedient in it. I'm not recommending that you all do this, but this is just what we heard. We called our family and said, you know, we love you all. We're not doing Christmas this year. We're taking the money that we were going to give for presents, and we're giving it to this cause. They got it. They understood. They supported, and that was great. But so that evening, we had a blind sacrificial offering, collected all of the money, and with those 30 families, so that was like 40, 50 people, I think, we raised $76,000.
Wow.
With 30 families. Not knowing where that money was going to go. And then the next morning, on Sunday morning, we found out where it was going to go. I can't remember the guy's name. I do this every time, Scott. 2004, Iraq War. We had a journalist that was over there that was beheaded.
Daniel Pearl.
I knew it was Pearl. I couldn't remember his first name. So we brought Daniel Pearl's widow and daughter in. She was just getting ready to go to college. And everything that we collected that Sunday morning on top of what we brought in Saturday night just gave to her. We didn't know her at all. It was a connection through a connection. She was blessed beyond belief. The daughter was just entering college, paid for her tuition. But the point of that is, and there were several stories about this, we were blessed beyond belief over the next coming weeks. That very next day, I had been interviewing the week before for a new position in our company. I got it. It was a huge, huge increase in salary. So there was that piece of it. Our parents, who didn't know this was going on at this point, my wife's parents, they had given us some money to help my wife start a business. And they didn't know this was going on. She called us that week and said, you know what? That debt's paid. It was more than what we gave. Mm-hmm. So God immediately gave back to us. It was incredible. We did this again the very next year, had the same conference. This time there were about 60 families represented. We brought in $158,000 that night with just 60 families. Again, next morning, we brought in another guest. It was this family that was traveling back from Florida from vacation, got into a car accident. The husband and one of the children ended up going to heaven and left the wife and I think two or three other children. Found a connection through another church, brought them in, and blessed them with that entire sum of money. We didn't keep any of it through our Sunday morning offering. We've got many, many stories of that. You know, fast forward a couple of years when we were already here on this campus, been here for about 3 years, and we had very quickly outgrown the space that we were in. And it was 2006, Thanksgiving weekend. And on that week, prior to that, let me back up to January. So we had 11 months to prepare for this. Pastor Steve taught on giving, and he said, I'm going to ask a big ask. You know, we're out of space, and we need everyone to pitch in and help build a new building for us, an extension. So Thanksgiving weekend came along. Before that, 4 weeks in a row, he taught about giving, basically the same thing about the resource revolution. It was that same type of teaching. And we were supposed to bring in $2 million in one offering. It's a lot of money for, at the time, we had probably had 600 people going here, maybe. So $2 million in one offering. You were here at that point, mm-hmm. weren't you? Yeah. So we came in, did worship together, had a basket up in the front of the altar, and families just came up one by one and gave into the offering, prayed over their offering as they were giving it. It was really powerful. Dismissed everyone, said, go to lunch, come back, and we counted the money. And again, $2 million we're supposed to bring in, we brought in $2.8 million.
Yeah.
Wow. That funded the building, which was all of the youth rooms and the fellowship hall where you have breakfast. So that, and the senior high room, or the middle school room there now. So that whole thing was built by the sacrificing of the people that run this church. You're sitting in this room from people sacrificing over another offering we even had later, a couple years later. James?
There was no really large checks in that either, if I understood it.
There wasn't like a $1 million check or a $500,000 check or anything like that.
Somebody dropped $2 million.
Yeah, no, not at all. That was definitely all of the people working together because there was a vision. We knew what God was going to do in this place. I'm sorry, we didn't know what God was going to do in this place, but we had faith that he was going to do something. And he has. He's blessed this place tremendously. When we started going here 15 years ago, there were 300 people in the church. There's now 5,500 people that are going here. It's just amazing to see how he's worked here. So giving sacrificially, again, giving until it hurts and giving with the right attitude, you are going to see tremendous blessings when you do that. Next section, giving God my time. Number one, time is a gift. We all have the same amount of time each day. What do you do with your time? Number two, I submit my time to God so that he can order my day for kingdom purposes. Number three, I spend my time based on my values. My values determine my priorities. And then number four, God has determined that one day in seven is to be the Sabbath. Now think about this for a second. There are 168 hours in a week over those 7 days. Where does your time go? You know, if you were to take the tithe rule, tithe being a tenth, that's 16.8 hours a week. Do you give 16.8 hours a week to God? You know, you're here a couple hours a week.
Just
the average Christian, what's that?
Church.
We'll put church in there. We'll put it all in there. We'll put church in there. We'll put prayer time. We'll put small group. We'll put all of that in there. The average Christian probably puts 2 or 3 hours in when they go to church on Sunday morning, when you think about that. So it's really about priorities. Where does your time go? Do you put more emphasis on watching television? Do you put more emphasis on running your kids here to there? Family's important. But are your kids like involved in five different activities and they're getting nothing from God out of those activities? There's nothing spiritual in those, you know? Think about where that time goes. Is that the best use of your time? If it means getting up half an hour earlier or an hour earlier and starting your day with prayer and devotion and giving that time to God. If you do that, he's going to set the rest of your day up for you, you know, because you're waking up and you're giving the first part of your day over to him. He'll lead you through the rest of your day. So I challenge you, go home. I know everyone's, I think I sucked the air out of the room. You're like, oh my gosh, am I spending 16.8 hours a week? But even if you're not there right now, how can you increase your time? Just think about that. All right, Scott.
Thanks, Jay. Giving God my treasure. Number one, ultimately God is the one who provides me all that I have. We heard some good examples of that. Number two, my possessions belong to God. Certainly we've talked about that. He has provided them for me and to use as a steward. And hopefully you've got this idea of stewardship locked in your head. In case you hadn't thought about this, my treasure includes proper care of my body. You know, God's given us the gift of life, right? And so we need to take care of ourselves. I stumbled on that one a little bit personally, but it's certainly important consideration for your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. Number four, when deciding where and whom to give, I listen to the Holy Spirit and obey. Jay brought up a great point for couples. Certainly praying together on this idea of giving, particularly sacrificial giving, is super important. You know, Jay's story, I love that his number hit right on. My story is my number is always a little less than my wife's number, and we always go with her number.
Yeah.
So, number five, I pay special attention to those relationships that God partners with me and those who share a common vision for kingdom advancement. So people, you're going to run across in life's path. Even on this prayer thing, praying sacrificially, if you're not with, if you're not married, certainly praying with someone else that is a believer is important as well. God puts you in those kinds of relationships. Number six, offerings. So we sometimes call it sacrificial offerings, but offerings, just in church speak, are given above the tithe. Okay, just to kind of frame that. Maybe given to the poor, to the needs of those in God's family, and to the advancement of God's kingdom and purposes, like Jay just shared about with the building project. It's furthering God's kingdom and purpose. Jay?
All right, giving God my talents. Number one, God has uniquely created me and given me various talents, abilities, and giftings for his glory. Number two, I ask myself, what are the natural abilities God has given me? What are my acquired skills? Number three, I'm a steward who one day will give an account of how I have used what God has given me. So outside of working here at the church and being in ministry and maybe for some of you serving at the church, a question would be, how are you using the abilities and the giftings that God has given you to reach people for the kingdom? One of the things that God has used me with is I am a huge advocate of volleyball. I've been playing volleyball since I was 17 years old. Absolutely love it. When I'm not spending time with my family or here at the church, I am on the volleyball court. I just have a passion for playing. I'm also very competitive. That didn't serve me too well in my years before I was saved, because I might have been that person that taunted a little bit or may have used some colorful language every once in a while, maybe. But after I was saved and, you know, still hanging around with these same people playing volleyball, they noticed a change in me. And they would ask, like, what's happened in your life that, you know, you're not the same person that you used to be on the court? It's like, oh, let me tell you. And it gave me a great platform to just talk to people about Jesus. And there are several people that go to this church as a result of me just having conversations with them on the volleyball court. So you wouldn't think necessarily that something that God has given you in that arena, volleyball has nothing to do with Christ necessarily, but it's been a great bridge for me to be able to speak to people. So I encourage you, when you're out in the workplace, when you're out just doing hobbies, or you're out playing sports or whatever, use that, because whether you realize it or not, people are watching you all the time. Because if you say you're a Christian, they're watching how you react, how you treat other people. And if you're very different outside of church on Sunday morning than you are within these walls, then there's a problem. And they notice that. So use what God's given you to be able to reach people. Can someone give me an example of just giftings that God has given you that you've used to reach people? Yes.
I guess I'm about to do that. God's given me a blessing in basketball is my passion.
Okay.
So God's given me an opportunity to be in the world. So I put on 3-on-3 basketball tournaments starting next year, and God's blessed me with 2 of them, which I haven't even done anything yet.
Yeah.
So that's my forte of how I can reach the community,
yeah,
of kind of being me in as a witness in some aspects of what I'm doing. So
yeah.
So it's pretty cool how things are just working out that way.
Yeah, awesome.
Years ago, I was in the grocery store. I'm a mom of 6, and
wow.
I didn't have all 6 with me that time, but there was a mom, a little boy in the front of the grocery cart, and he was asking for eggs. Mm-hmm. He was asking for cookies, and she was saying, I can only buy eggs this week. Mm-hmm. This is all I can buy. And he was too late to not be vocal about the disappointment. And she began to get frustrated. And the Lord brought me back to one of those situations I was in. She began to bark at him. You know, he's probably not even 2. And I just stepped up to her and put my hand on her back, and I said, sometimes life happens and we didn't choose. Mm-hmm. And we're just having to ride out the storm. And I said, it's not his fault. And he only wants love, and God only wants to love us. So if you'd like, I'll just push him, and you can go collect yourself so that you can handle this. Mm-hmm. I have confidence in you. And she let me take him up and down the pizza aisle. And at the same time, I was feeling the Lord say, just go buy the eggs. Mm-hmm. That was an easy thing. But when she came back, she said, my husband left me. Mm-hmm. And I had to find the money to come to the grocery store.
Yeah.
And my husband didn't leave me, but we've been in those situations where we had to find the money to get all the groceries. But you think it was a little thing at the time, because I wasn't a working woman, I wasn't out in the world.
Right. Yeah. But God gave you obviously the gift of wisdom and discernment there, and encouragement, and you use that.
And the pain in my heart, because I had been there before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Many times I had to go back to the car because I was going to lose it with a kid.
Yeah. How many times have you been in a situation, a similar situation, and God's telling you to do something and you didn't do it? I mean, I've been there several times. So be open, and someone's probably taught already on the gifts of the Holy Spirit. But and hearing God's voice, but respond to him. Don't block what he's saying. All right.
Come to think of it, 2 weeks after that, I was scrounging change just because I was being inventive to pay for something, and at the grocery store, and the man behind me said, "Please let me buy your groceries." And I said, "Oh no, this is for fun."
Yeah.
Just getting rid of all this change that's hanging out.
Yeah.
Oh no, let me buy your groceries. And I was like fighting with him, like, no, that's good. You can give it to somebody else.
Yeah.
He said, no, if I don't, I won't get a blessing this week. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. How hard is it to accept something from someone else, whether it's money, a gift, even a compliment, we seem to deflect. Someone pays you a compliment. Oh, no, no, no. You know, it's someone else. You are ripping someone else off from a blessing at that point. Our pride wells up in us, and it can prevent that blessing from that person. So think about that in the future. When someone pays you a compliment, accept it, you know. And then you can give credit where credit's due if you choose to. But definitely accept it. Yes?
Well, I like the example that you were talking about being tight-fisted. We took the financial peace class several years ago. And towards the end, he talks about, you know, keeping your hand, the palms open like this and let it flow out. Mm-hmm. And not, you know, we don't do it so that we can get back. That's how it works.
Yeah.
If you're tight-fisted, it's not going to pass back to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have to say I was blessed with especially a father, my mother also, but my dad is probably one of the most generous men on the planet. And he will tell you, I mean, God has brought money into him and he has poured it out. And he since I was little, he has said, well, everything I have belongs to the Lord. And he's taught me that from the time I was little. So I just encourage all of us to teach our children that.
Yeah.
That, you know, you may live in a humongous house, but it's the Lord's, you know. And we have a special friend, you know, we all see the guys selling newspapers on the corners and whatnot, but we have a special one in Green Hills where we live that we go visit him on Sunday and give him an extra blessing on Sunday. And the other day we set it in Starbucks because he stands in front of Starbucks and he goes, where are you going, Miss Melanie? And I said, I'm going to Bible study today. And he said, you are? And he knows my name. I mean, we hug, you know, it's we've become very good friends with him. But, you know, I hadn't had much a chance to really talk to him. And he just rattled off, I've hidden your word in my heart that I might not sin against you. And I was like, you know. Anyway, so, you know, we just enjoy seeing Clint. And anyway, he's in Green Hills and Crow Starbucks.
Bless him. Yeah, awesome. Thank you. Scott?
Truths about tithing. What is tithing? Tithe simply means a tenth or a part. Number two, what is the purpose of tithing? The purpose of tithing is to teach you to always put God first in your lives. Now, we've already talked about it's all His anyway, so you give Him back something that's already His. It's for your heart. It's for, you know, to make sure that you're putting God first in your lives. You know, sometimes I get asked this question, okay, well, do I tithe on the growth? First fruits, by the way, that's your income, first fruit. Do you give on the gross or the net? Well, if you're asking that question, there's a little heart issue going on there. Okay, it is on the gross. Now, having said that, I'm also a big believer in this idea of continuous improvement. If you're not there right now, but it's revealed to you that's what God expects, then there's ways to develop plans to get to there gradually over time. And I will also suggest to you this idea of 10%. Don't put a limit on God. You know, that's always been one of those things with tithing. I mean, the 10% is kind of like the basics to keep your heart in check. But this idea of sacrificial offerings and giving beyond 10% is something to consider as well. When do I tithe? Certainly on a regular basis. Scripture talks about on the first day of every week, set aside some of what you've earned and give it as an offering. The amount depends on how much the Lord has helped you earn. Pretty cut and dry. What is the difference between the tithe and the offering? We've touched on that. You know, and I will just suggest to you something to think about, and I'm going to give a quick plug because we're running out of time. We do have a biblical stewardship class that is taught here at Grace. It will start in this winter, January 10th, I think it is. It will be the first class. It's a 10-week course, and it covers things like what does God say about investing? What does God say about estate planning? It covers a whole, teaching your children. It covers a whole wealth of information. So if that is something you're interested in, I would encourage you to tune into it. Myself and Brett Whitley teach the class, and it's 10 weeks in class in general, but it covers a wide range of topics. Obviously, we can't cover it all, you know, in this short period here. So, what should I tithe? How's my plug? Was that quick enough? the first part of what I earn, not the leftovers. And then where should I tithe is where I worship. In this case, as Grace Chapel, you should tithe here, wherever you're worshiping. You know, I will tell you when I visit churches, I do give to that church as well when I go visit that church, but I don't forget my home church.
Right.
So just something to think about.
Right. Yeah. Your tithe belongs with your home church. So people ask me as well, what about like charities? I give to Mercy Ministries or to Caleb or Way FM. Does that count as part of my tithe? And no, that's a gift above and beyond your tithe. And it's great if you're in a position to be able to do that, to bless those organizations. But anything that you put a restriction on is not part of your tithe. So if you're saying, I want to give money over to, specifically over to the youth ministry, or if I want to give money to Syrian refugees, or whatever that is, that's above and beyond your typical tithe. I know when I was growing up, I wasn't taught about tithing in the Catholic Church at all. My example of tithing was, you know, we were faithful, we went every Sunday, the basket came around, my dad would throw a 20 in the basket. And that's what I thought giving or tithing was, because I didn't really know what tithing was, so, you know, I used offering as my benchmark. And after we got married, my wife was Baptist, she knew what tithing was. So, you know, the offering basket comes around, I whip out my wallet and throw in a 20 and get the raised eyebrow. I'm like, what? We'll talk about it later. So I'm like, what's the deal? And she goes, that's not tithing. And I said, like, what do you mean? And she goes, tithing is a tenth of your income. I was like, a tenth of my income? You've got to be kidding. But I had no idea. So, I mean, that was my example growing up is what my dad did. And it wasn't until the resource revolution is really what captured my heart at that point about giving. And from that point on, once we started tithing regularly, God has blessed us beyond belief. And I just encourage you, when he's speaking to you, as I said earlier, listen. Because when I came on staff here, Pastor Steve brought me in and just had a conversation with me and said he wanted to bring me in as the small groups pastor. And I just kind of chuckled. I'm like, okay. Because number one, I'm not qualified. Number two, I had a really good job. It paid very well, and there was no way. I just knew there was no way that I'd be able to live on the income that they were going to offer. So, you know, he told me the amount, and I'm like, yeah, I'll go home and I'll pray about it. But I don't see that happening. And if any of you have ever talked to Steve before, one-on-one, he gets this look on his face that's this kind of look. He knew. God told him that I was going to be the small group's pastor, but I did not believe it at that point. So we went home. I went home. We prayed about it and prayed about it and prayed about it. And I finally just said to my wife, it's like, you know what? I really think this, I mean, God's calling me to do this. I don't know why, but he is. And we accepted the position. I accept the position. And on paper, it made no sense whatsoever. I mean, my income was far less than what our monthly bills were. And we just did it by faith. We're like, okay, God, if you want us to do this, we need you to take care of us. And he did. And, you know, even years later, I would look at the budget and go, I mean, there's no way. It did not make sense at all, but he provided and has never not provided. And when you think about tithing and giving, and this is a very real scenario, when you get into a situation where money is tight, don't take it from the tithe. You know, if you have to be creative in your finances, I mean, what we did is, like, I saw a bill to, I don't know, it was Macy's or someplace, and it's like, okay, I'm just not going to pay that one this month, but I didn't take it away from the tithe. And in doing so, he has blessed us, and we've never wanted for anything, really, since we started faithfully tithing. So I recommend definitely doing that when you can, all the time. And lastly, I just want to say a little about when should you give. Some people can get very legalistic about, okay, I just got my paycheck, I have to write this out right now. And as Scott mentioned earlier, it's a heart issue. If you know what your income is, and you know you're going to church on Sunday, and you know you're going to put that check in the basket, don't worry about it. You can write it on Sunday, not on Friday, as soon as you get paid. Also, some people get paid differently. Some people get paid once a month, every other week, and they choose to give differently. Some people might write a check once a month for their whole month because they budgeted, they know what that looks like. Some people give every other week. That's fine as well. Some people put it in the offering bag. Some people do it online. All of that is good and fine. We don't look at that. Pastor Steve, I don't know if any of you have been through the membership class, but he usually mentions in there, he has no idea who gives in this church at all. There are basically two of us that know, and thankfully God has given me the ability to forget. So, I mean, I can't tell who gives what unless I go look it up. So don't worry about being convicted, and it gives Pastor Steve complete freedom to be able to preach the word on Sunday mornings and not have to worry about, oh gosh, I've got a touchy subject this week and I've got a huge donor sitting over there. Am I going to offend him or not? He's free from that completely. So that's completely wonderful for him. And as a church, Grace Chapel gives far beyond 10%. When you look at our outreach numbers, we give, it's right around 30%. Of what we bring in, we send out. So we're asking everyone here to do what we're doing ourselves. So if you have any questions about tithing afterwards, you can come up and talk to me or to Scott. But I think that's it.
One final point on the tithing, just because a thought came to me. I believe it's in your book, 8 Reasons I Should Tithe. Spend a little time on number 6. Mm-hmm. Malachi 3:10, bring your whole tithe to my storehouse. Test me in this, says the Lord. I believe that's the only place in the Bible where God says, test me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it reminds me of that song called Ocean from Hillsong, mm-hmm. Trust Without Borders. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to do that, y'all, to trust without borders. But if you start putting borders around what you think God will or won't do in this area of your life, then you're putting borders up,
yeah.
And you know, you got to break those down, and it just requires constant prayer. It requires a step in faith, and you can bet the enemy's going to try to trip you up along the way too. Mm-hmm. The world is always going to throw things at us. I mean, it's just a fact. I wish there was a way around it, but it's a fact. And to the degree that you can recognize it for what it is, then you can usually weather that storm fairly well. So,
yeah, good. James, BJ is not here for us to ask this question to, but what do we do next? What's that?
I can call him.